to the market, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello again. Orion Samuelson, joined a little bit later by Max Armstrong for our weekly get-together and a look at markets from Wall Street to the world. And, of course, a lot of activity in the Wall Street trade again this week. We ended with all three indices on Wall Street at record highs as we continue to set records in the stock market. Incidentally, our dateline today is Friday, January 26, and we're in Scottsdale, Arizona. So let's begin with a look at what happened today on Wall Street. Again, a strong showing despite concern over what President Trump might say at that meeting of world economists in Davos, Switzerland. But apparently he didn't shake people up too much, because the latest round of strong earnings reports dominated Wall Street today, including Intel and AbbVie, along with continued weakness in the dollar, lifted each of the major Wall Street indices to closing records on Friday. The Dow Industrial Average up 221 points, ending the day and the week at 26,614. The S&P 500 gained 53 points to end the day and the week at 2872, and the NASDAQ Composite added 94 points to end the week at 7505. For the week, the Dow up 2.08%, the S&P 500 up nearly 2.25%, and the NASDAQ up nearly 2.33% for the week. Another very strong week on Wall Street. So let's take a look at some of the action on Wall Street today. The latest round of strong earnings reports, including Intel and AbbVie, helping the market to record closes. Intel shares surged as high as $50.15. That's their highest level since October of 2000. And results from the chip maker's quarterly earnings report indicated the company's shift to higher margin data center business was working. And then the AbbVie story. Their shares jumped 13.75% after the drug maker significantly boosted its 2018 earnings forecast with help from U.S. tax reform, said it hopes to accelerate dividend growth and share buybacks. Ryan Dietrich, who is senior marketing strategist at a firm in Charlotte, North Carolina, said we continue to see these positive steps in the right direction, and definitely earnings are clearly justifying a lot of the recent move upward that we've had. Fourth quarter earnings growth for the S&P 500 now estimated at a little over 13%, according to Thomson Reuters data. That would be up from 12% at the start of the year. And of the 133 companies in the index that have reported through today, 79.7%, call it 80%, have topped expectations. Gross domestic product increased at a 2.6% annual rate in the fourth quarter, according to a Commerce Department report today. And that's below the 3% forecast, as the strongest pace of consumer spending in 3 years resulted in a surge in imports. Brant Schutte, chief investment strategist at Northwestern Mutual Wealth Management in Milwaukee, said, "You have manufacturing and the consumer doing well at the same time, and the globe is doing better, so that's a path for future gross domestic gains, which has always provided a fertile backdrop for earning gains." Now, weakness in the dollar, which is supportive for large multinational companies, continued. It's also very supportive for agricultural commodities in the world market. And the dollar on track for its worst week since May, after comments from senior U.S. officials this week backing a weak currency. So that's much of what happened today on Wall Street. And time to look ahead to next week, because we're going again into another heavy earnings report week for the stock market. So what do we watch for next week? Well, let's take a look at some of the earnings reports that will be out. The Dow components featuring in the earnings lineup next week: Apple reporting first quarter results on Thursday, along with Pfizer and Dow DuPont scheduled to report fourth quarter results the same day. Apple expected to report growth in revenue and profit for the holiday quarter. However, all eyes will be on the firm's forecast after analysts have raised concerns of a slow March quarter, citing sluggish demand for the iPhone X, the anniversary edition of iPhone, Apple's priciest so far. Began shipping in November, attracting long lines at stores. Pfizer likely to report better than expected fourth quarter results on Tuesday. Dow DuPont, the world's largest chemical maker, expected to post a quarterly profit, beating expectations on growth across all of its business segments. And investors will be on the lookout for 2018 CapEx budget, earnings forecast, updates on divestitures of overlapping businesses after the merger of Dow Chemicals and DuPont. Google parent company Alphabet will be reporting, expected to post a rise in fourth quarter revenue and profit on Thursday, benefiting from healthy mobile search traffic and advertising sales. Social media giant Facebook expected to post a jump in fourth quarter revenue and profit on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, online retail giant Amazon.com expected to post an increase in fourth quarter profit and revenue. Amazon trounced Wall Street expectations the last quarter and is likely to report strong results again, thanks to the benefits of a strong demand during the crucial holiday season. A busy week for economic data kicks off with the release Monday of September consumer spending data. Data from the Labor Department on Tuesday will likely show its employment cost index increased 0.6% in the fourth quarter. Also on Tuesday, the National Association of Realtors expected to report its seasonally adjusted monthly index of pending sales of existing U.S. homes. And on the same day, the Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee begins a two-day meeting on interest rate policy. Thursday of next week, the Institute for Supply Management will likely report that its national manufacturing index slipped to a reading of 59 in January, down from 59.9 in December. And the weekly initial claims for state unemployment benefits are forecast to have gone up to 235,000, which would be just a gain of 2,000 from the previous week. And then on Friday, the Labor Department's closely watched employment report will likely show non-farm payrolls increased by 178,000 jobs in January, picking up from December's 148,000 gain. Now, back to some of the earnings reports on the schedule for next week. Health insurer Aetna will report fourth quarter earnings before the bell on Tuesday. And on Thursday, MasterCard, whose payment network is the world's second largest, is poised to report an increase in fourth quarter profit. ExxonMobil Corporation, the world's largest publicly traded oil producer, expected to post an 18% jump in fourth quarter profit on Friday. On Thursday, Marathon Petroleum Corporation expected to report higher profit and revenue for the last quarter, helped by a wider crude price differential and the U.S. tax reform. MetLife expected to report its fourth quarter results on Wednesday, and smartphone chipmaker Qualcomm expected to report on Wednesday as well. Alibaba Group Holding Limited, China's top e-commerce firm, will announce its results for the quarter ended December 1st on Thursday. So a lot going on in the earnings report season. And then let's take a look at oil and the oil market for this week, because oil settled higher, posting another weekly gain here thanks to the weak dollar. And so oil prices settled higher today after hitting three-year highs, with crude also posting a weekly gain as a weaker U.S. dollar again helped the price of oil. Brent crude futures settled up 10 cents a barrel, $70.52, and West Texas Intermediate crude closed at $66.14 a barrel. That's up 63 cents a barrel, nearly 1%. So all in all, the markets continue to show underlying strength, especially with the earnings season showing the results that they're showing. Probably one of the bigger surprises of the holiday season is the retail sales upturn. And as a result, today, U.S. fund managers are betting that rising wages and the effects of the corporate tax cut will prove a lifeline to middle market retailers who have struggled to remain relevant in the age of Amazon. And so Wells Fargo, CM Advisors, and Plum Funds are among those asset management firms that are increasing their positions in companies that focus on shoppers who earn near the average family income of $74,000 annually. With unemployment at 17-year lows, companies are having a hard time filling low to middle-income jobs, and as a result, wages for those workers are expected to increase more than 3% this year. That would be the largest increase in the category since April of 2009. And given the expected increase in wages and one-time bonuses resulting from the tax reform signed into law December 22nd, fund managers are betting that workers will spend more, thus helping drive up share prices of retailers. So a little bit of good news for retailers this week as we look at the wrap-up in the holiday shopping season. Max Armstrong standing by and our guest to discuss markets when we continue here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
From International Agribusiness Group, joining us in the studio is Mark Feit. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks, Max. Good to be here.
We're kind of in a holding pattern here, I guess, aren't we? Waiting to see what kind of South American production eventually develops. I mean, generally, it has been felt that that crop is going to be a big one, and there seems to be little to derail that. But showers have been a little sparse in some areas, we hear.
Yeah, I think we continue to be a little concerned about the southern edge of that crop, Argentina and southern Brazil. I would say that Brazil is mostly out of the woods, and you can count that crop at 110 million tons or bigger. If you had to handicap that, maybe it's getting a little bigger, and we're probably shrinking Argentina a little bit, but we've got a lot of season left in Argentina.
And we found a couple of years ago that flooding rains late in the season can make a difference. That happened.
It can. So, yeah, essentially we're mid-June. You've still got 45 to 60 days of critical time for much of that crop, so in Argentina. So a lot of things can happen.
We also hear a lot of chatter about the wheat crop now and then, you know, because of dry conditions in the plain states and strong winds on certain days out that way. It's hard to get too lathered up about wheat, though, isn't it?
Yeah, we were with some wheat growers last week, and they certainly aren't too anxious about it. It's hard to kill a wheat crop in January and February. We'll see what we've got in March.
The tail end of that wheat crop is more critical, isn't it? I mean, you get into those final weeks, and we have seen things change dramatically in a matter of days.
Absolutely. So, like the soybeans in South America, they've got a lot of season to go.
Where in the world are we seeing crops in jeopardy? I mean, is there any place, and especially as we look over the months ahead here, where is a place where possibly the production may not be so robust?
Well, you don't have that many areas in the southern hemisphere where we're growing crops now. South Africa, the corn crop is maybe in jeopardy, but that's a 10 or 15 million ton crop. It's not that consequential. But I would say the Argentine crop is the one that we're focused on mostly right now.
I know this is way out there. We have a lot of weeks during which we could pick up moisture, but the drought monitor map in the 48 adjacent states of the United States is kind of impressive right now. When you look at all of the areas that are dry, that again, certainly that could turn.
Yeah, I think it is a concern, and certainly the market is having a hard time getting comfortable with, I think, the wheat crop. And first, and then also as we get close to, we're not far from planting some of this early corn and soybeans, so certainly something we need to monitor.
Yeah, you think about it, there'll be corn going in just the next few weeks.
Yes.
The southern part of the country, down
yes.
in Texas.
Yes.
From the standpoint of an acreage shift, any major acreage changes, we've seen some private estimates coming out that indicate that corn and soybean acreage will be just about the same as U.S. farmers planted last year.
Well, I think there is a push to soybeans. I think the surprise we got out of the wheat acreage was we thought we'd have another 1.5 million to put in corn and soybeans. We don't have that. So you've got to shrink the share of the pie for corn and soybeans a bit. Cotton, we think cotton acres are up 1 million. That's probably 500,000 less corn. So we're at about 89 to 89.5 million corn and 91 soybeans. That's probably the numbers you see out of the February form USDA.
The soybean prices have risen occasionally here in recent weeks. Has that helped a little bit in cementing in the minds of growers that they might put in a few more beans?
I think so. Of course, we've got to hold that through February to keep the insurance price up. Maybe we can get back toward that 10-20 number we had last year, but it looks like maybe we can hold $10 for insurance. But I think it certainly makes people comfortable pushing towards soybeans.
Exports have been a little bit less than impressive, haven't they, in recent weeks?
Out of U.S., yes. The river's been an issue, but we've had better business out of Brazil. If you look at what China's taken, they're through the first 3 months of the year, they're 11% over last year. USDA at 3% for the year looks a little light. So I think the Chinese demand helps that market.
So China is buying. They're just not buying it from the United States as much.
That's right. And that's where I'm concerned. As long as they're buying, I don't care who they're buying from.
It's pulling down the world supply, you're saying.
Exactly.
Their prices, are the Brazilian prices better than ours on soybeans? Is that part of the incentive?
A little bit, but they've been mostly on par. They've had a small advantage. Of course, their supply right now is starting to get short, and we've certainly got a lot of beans. But part of it's been just these river issues and shipping issues.
How much of a concern? And, of course, that's cold weather related, right?
Cold weather and dry.
Yeah.
So it's improved. We've thawed out some of the ice, and river levels have gotten better. But so we think most of that's taken care of.
But generally in the wintertime, we have shipping problems. That's not out of the ordinary, right, on the river system?
It's not uncommon, yes, especially in north. But I think the difference this year is the Ohio has been a bigger issue than normal.
And some farmers will benefit when that happens, depending on where they are positioned on the river system.
Yes, and the ones in the west where we've been shipping heavy out of the PNW, their values have been better.
All of this talk about trade in recent days, it continues to be unsettling, doesn't it?
It certainly does. Maybe I'm naive, but I don't think we'll see any major changes. We've got too big a business, book of business with the Mexicans and the Canadians, and I think that's a I just don't think we can give that up.
I feel the same way, as a matter of fact. Maybe I'm naive, but I've had the same opinion. But I know farmers are quite concerned about it. The wheat growers the other day were talking about the competitive disadvantage we now have, being on the outside looking in after those 11 nations got it all together for the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we're not a part of that. They say that because those tariffs will not be applied as heavily for our competitors, we won't have as good a chance in selling into places like Japan. Is that in fact the case?
Well, I think it's going to continue to be a challenge. It's been a challenge just from a value standpoint the last few years. You've had a lot cheaper wheat available in other places in the world and closer to where they use it. I think we're going to continue to grow less and less wheat in the U.S. and grow more soybeans. That's been the trend. So I think that's going to be a less and less a factor.
Well, what about spring wheat? Do we still have the need for that higher protein wheat, such as was the case last year?
I think so. We created a little bit of a hole last year with that short spring crop. So we think spring acres are unchanged. We think the values, new crop values, are good enough to hold that acreage together.
What have you been hearing from producers out there, the attitudes of the growers? You've been talking to them. What are they telling you, Mark?
So it's really a tale of two groups, and it's the ones that had very good yields last year that feel pretty good, and financially they weren't damaged or held things together. The group that didn't have good yields last year or even average yields with the prices where they're at are struggling, and their mood's a little different.
Is there a geography where you find more of those growers? And I ask you that because I heard from so many producers over a wide area of the Corn Belt of the United States that their yields did exceed expectations. Are there pockets that you're alluding to there where that was not the case?
Yeah, there are small pockets. Certainly that crop surprised us last year. But there seems to be small pockets where yields just – where we missed a rain or two and yields just weren't as good as some of those super yields other places.
This is a long winter for those folks, you're saying.
It is a long winter. Well, it's going to be a long summer, too, because we got to get to the next crop.
We appreciate you coming in. Thanks, Mark. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Max.
Mark Feit with International Agribusiness Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The cattle market ended the week on an up note, but after the market closed, it probably fell to a down note. The Cattle on Feed report coming out this afternoon after the market closed. Big inventories, more than marketed, is not friendly, but in line pretty much with expectations. Placements larger than anticipated, according to analysts, will be bearish. One analyst said the market for cattle should be down Monday, especially after the big run-up on this Friday. They're saying that feeder cattle could be limited down, and live cattle could be at least $2 lower. But with the negative report, it's doubtful that packers will pay up for cattle. So here are the percentages. The number of cattle on feed January 1st. Actually went up 8%, and that was a little bit above what trade was expecting. And then placements in December, they were looking for about a 3% decline and instead got a 1% increase. And marketings in December pretty much on line with expectations, going down just 1%. And so some of the comments from traders, Don Roos, president of U.S. Commodities, said, we had a break. That was a surprisingly quick break from the top today, and today we brought back the technical buying because of where the fundamentals are sitting. So February live cattle futures finished the day and the week, well, the day $2.12 a hundredweight higher, and April cattle up $2.02. And then after the futures closed today, cash cattle traded at $126 in Kansas, up $3 from a week ago. But live cattle futures have risen in 9 out of the last 11 sessions, gaining 6% during the rally, partly driven by the slumping dollar, which again makes U.S. goods more attractive to foreign buyers. But now, as the cattlemen can look forward to getting together here in Phoenix, Arizona next week, they'll probably come to their annual convention with mixed feelings after the cattle on feed report today. Lean hog futures weaker for a second straight day. Again, plentiful hog supplies weighing on cash prices. February lean hog futures were down 20 cents at $72.27 a hundredweight. So what about the grain market? Well, the headline on the Reuters story said, soy slips, hard red winter wheat jumps, traders continuing to watch the weather. Soybean futures sagged today, pulling back from a rally above $10 a bushel this week, while hard red winter wheat futures climbed to their highest price in more than 3 months. Traders in both markets were eyeing the unfavorably dry weather in important growing areas, Argentina for soybeans and the Southern Plains for wheat. Next week, they'll see what the weather forecasts have in the way of any relief from those weather patterns. A wetter weather pattern could begin to replenish moisture in the south-central U.S. plains, while more dryness is expected across major growing areas of Argentina, according to U.S.-based weather from Radiant Solutions. And Argentina, keep in mind, the world's number 3 exporter of soybeans and corn, and the number 1 supplier of soybean meal, livestock feed. And as we heard the discussion earlier with Max and his guest, weather in Argentina still remains to be a question mark and a wild card in where the market is going. March wheat ended up 6.5 cents today at $4.41 a bushel. The most actively traded soybean contract closed down 6.75 cents a bushel, and March corn rose 1.25 cents a bushel in today's activity. Couple of things in the U.S. News today affecting agriculture. This one happened in Iowa. A new report on the rapid expansion of hog farms in Iowa concludes the state's regulatory system is failing to protect the environment and public health for the sake of profit by the politically powerful livestock industry. I'm quoting the story now. The report, released Thursday by retired University of Iowa professors James Merchant and David Osterberg, recommends a moratorium on new construction until an improved permitting process can be implemented. The pork industry acknowledges rapid growth, but considers it good for farmers and the economy. And Eldon McAfee, an agriculture law attorney for the Iowa Pork Producers Association, says environmental and health concerns are being addressed by the current system. He says a moratorium would devastate the industry and Iowa's economy, adding it's unneeded because the current permit system has worked for 16 years. So that's one we're going to have to watch to see if it has any legs to go further. NAFTA. Well, they're pretty much winding up the NAFTA pre-discussions. And today, a senior Mexican official expressed talks to modernize the North American Free Trade Agreement could be extended to give officials more time to address major disagreements threatening to undermine the $1.2 trillion trade pact. Officials are planning an extra round of negotiations in Mexico at the end of February. We'll keep an eye on that one because it continues to move ever so slowly. Well, thank you for joining us, our weekly get-together. Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson, and we thank you for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.